Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls One Planet series. Well, today is one of our favorite shows of the year. We are introducing you to three of this year's Brower Youth Award winners. Every year, the Earth Island Institute recognizes the work of six young leaders for their accomplishments in the environmental movement. Today, we are joined by three. Diego Arriola Fernandez is an environmental and human rights activist and a public speaker. Diego created Green Speaking after he learned about the devastating consequences of plastic pollution and excessive consumerism. His campaign uses school engagement, social media, and motivational videos to encourage children, schools, and businesses in Mexico to fight plastic pollution by modifying their habits, their policies, and their strategies. Hi, Diego. Thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on your award.
Hi, thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Well, it's an honor to have you. Thank you. We're also joined by Danielle Boye, an Ojibwe Indigenous teen entrepreneur, author, educator, and inventor who helps increase STEAM educational accessibility, science, technology, engineering, art, and math. She helps increase STEAM among low-income and Indigenous students. Hi, Danielle. Thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations on your award.
Hi, thank you so much.
We're also joined by Alexandra Collins, an environmental activist. In 2018, Alexandra and her sister founded Students Against Ethylene Oxide to educate students and the public about the cancer risks associated with ETO. They educate the public about safer sterilization methods for medical and commercial products. Alexandra's activism began after she learned that for 30 years, Sterigenics, an industrial sterilization company in Willowbrook, Illinois, had been emitting high levels of ethylene oxide, a colorless gas that is a known carcinogen near homes and schools in the area. Hi, Alexandra. Thank you so much for joining us, and congratulations.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, because of COVID, you can watch this year's ceremony online. It is really an amazing ceremony, so inspiring. It'll take place on October 15th from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. The second part, a Meet the Winners Q&A, will take place on October 20th from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. And you can find information about how you can register at yourcallradio.org. Well, before we dive in and talk about your incredible work, I just want to ask you all about your thoughts about the moment that we are in. It's less than a month before the very important election in the United States. Climate change is one of the major issues of our time. So, Alexandra, let's start off with you. What are your thoughts about where we are right now? How are you thinking about this moment?
Yeah, I think it's really important, especially since we're coming up to an election soon, that as students, we are all trying to advocate for clean air and for our health and kind of voicing that to legislators and politicians to encourage them to create some laws that protect us in the future. And so I think it's a really important time for us to kind of step up and make sure that we're really showing our support for legislation that really protects our health.
And Alexander, do you mind me asking how old you are?
I'm 16 years old.
Okay, so wow, you're 16. I was wondering if you were old enough to vote yet.
No.
But unfortunately, not yet. You have just 2 years left. Well, thank you for that. What about you, Danielle? First off, do you mind me asking how old you are?
I'm 19, so this is the first presidential election I can actually vote in.
Oh, that's exciting. How do you feel about it?
It's mixed feelings because I feel like the changes that need to be made are not being made. And I feel like voting is a step in the right direction, but not farther enough of a step. Mm-hmm. And it can feel like you're very trapped and stuck sometimes, and that it's like, oh my gosh, I can only do this one small thing. But working with my students and even working with my community and helping make those changes and having everyone vote, I think we are going to see a change that we really want to see.
Well, what are your thoughts about this moment, Danielle? I mean, we'll get into this later in the hour, but, you know, climate change and all the work that you're focusing on is just so incredibly important right now.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. Honestly, it can feel really, really scary It can feel really scary seeing politicians not take these issues seriously enough. It can feel absolutely terrifying to have people not take your words seriously. And this election is just a reminder of that and how pivotal the results of this election are going to be.
And what about you, Diego? You are in Mexico, and Mexico is directly affected by policies in the United States. How are you thinking about this election?
Sure. Actually, I was talking about this issue, well, this topic, with my friend Julian these past days. He lives in California, and he's actually doing a lot of movement and videos about this topic, encouraging people to vote. And he asked me about my perspective, and I think what we were talking about is that Mexico is hugely affected by decisions from the U.S. government. And actually, last year, my school was canceled for 3 or 4 weeks due to poorer quality here in Mexico City. So I really think that more climate justice and more climate responsibility and a green economy is actually very, very important in the upcoming years.
And of course, the United States immigration policy has a huge impact on Mexico.
Yeah, totally.
Well, let's dive in a little bit and talk about your incredible projects, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the election. But I want to make sure we spend enough time talking about your amazing projects. Diego, let's start with you. You created Green Speaking after you learned about the devastating consequences of plastic pollution and excessive consumerism. Also, I wanted to find out, you're in Mexico, so you're not voting this election, but do you mind me asking how old you are?
Sure. I'm 18.
You're
18? I just turned 18.
Oh, happy birthday. So when did you first learn about plastic pollution?
While growing up, I kind of started learning about it in school, by myself. But it wasn't until last year, a year and a half ago, that I went to Ocean Heroes Bootcamp in Vancouver, Canada. And I learned about all about plastic facts, microplastics, their effect on ocean, on our biodiversity and human health. And that inspired me to really take action here in Mexico and inspire more people.
And can you tell us what is the situation like in Mexico with plastic pollution?
It is very negative for a lot of people. It actually affects a lot of people, especially in low-income areas or in more segregated areas. And here in Mexico, for example, the poor quality is devastating, as I said before. School was canceled during 4 weeks due to that. And a lot of people are very misinformed about it, and other people are very indifferent, and plastic is everywhere, and plastic bans are just starting, but it isn't like very concrete or very substantial, such as in very much states of the US or in other countries. So we need action.
What are you doing to reach the people who are either misinformed or indifferent about plastic pollution?
Well, my team at Green Speaking, our first goal is to inform, to educate people. And we do videos, we do lectures, workshops. Well, right now, due to the pandemic, COVID-19, we are hosting all of them online. But we were planning on doing a lot of conferences for kids and colleges here in Mexico to inform and engage more people into this matter. And we also host interviews and try to communicate all kinds of green topics and things that in Mexico aren't as important as you might think, because people are much more concerned about football or politics or narcotraffic, and they are often misguided and misinformed about these beautiful topics.
Diego, what really stands out for you? Like, do you have some stories to share about what happens when people learn more about plastic pollution because of what you're all doing with Green Speaking?
Sure. I mean, I have seen a lot of young children from my the workshops we have been doing, very inspired and inspiring as well their parents, their communities. My sister, since a very young age, has been very involved in recycling, and she's very committed to taking advantage of everything we buy and every package. And I am really proud about that. And I am also really proud about all my friends and family that are each time more committed and also bringing this awareness and this concern into their businesses or their classes or whatever they do. They also try to contribute to this cause. And I think that's very, very important and powerful.
Diego Arriola Fernandez is an environmental and human rights activist. He created Green Speaking after he learned about the devastating consequences of plastic pollution and excessive consumerism. Diego is one of the winners of this year's Brower Youth Awards. And again, it is going to be online this year because of COVID. So regardless of where you are, you can watch it this year, October 15th from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. It is so inspiring. You can find information about how to register at yourcallradio.org. Let's go next to Alexandra. Alexandra, you and your sister are doing amazing work trying to educate people about ethylene oxide in Illinois. First off, can you tell us what is ethylene oxide?
Sure. So ethylene oxide is a class one carcinogen. So basically, it is a chemical that ends up causing cancer. And it also is used primarily to sterilize medical equipment, but it's also used to sterilize commercial products. So in general, it has a lot of other side effects other than cancer on the body, but that is one of the main ones that has particularly been influential in my community.
So this is being used by Sterigenics, an industrial sterilization company. When did you first learn about this?
Around 2 years ago, I found out that my community had been exposed to this cancer-causing gas for a period of around 30 years. And I actually used to run in front of the Sterigenics facility every single day. And so I was so surprised to find out that it was actually detrimental to my health to run along that path in front of that facility because I was exposing myself to ethylene oxide at higher concentrations. And so that kind of really spurred inspiration for me to create action, as well as just learning about the various cancer cases in my neighborhoods and family and friends, just getting this terrible disease and seeing how they'd have to deal with it has really been such an inspiration to starting my work.
So tell us more about your organization, Students Against Ethylene Oxide.
We are a completely student-led group. So Students Against Ethylene Oxide is called SATO for short. And we actually have chapters across the entire United States, and we're starting up a new chapter in Guatemala this year. So that's really exciting. And our goal is to create a stronger legislation that bans ethylene oxide near schools. Because as students, we don't have the option to go to a school that's not close to a facility. And so we really do try to focus on creating that stronger legislation so that no student has to put themselves at risk while getting educated.
Is this something that your fellow community members have been talking about? I mean, is this getting, or did this get a lot of attention before you started this organization?
So I actually started the organization when everyone in my community found out about the ETO emitter in our neighborhood. And so we were really kind of at the beginning of the movement. Ethylene oxide wasn't really known to us. And so when we did find out, it actually spurred a lot of movements and a lot of community groups to kind of take action. So other community groups like the Ethylene Oxide Sluice and Stop Sterigenics have been huge impacts on creating kind of stronger legislation. But SATO is the only student group, and we really do try to focus on the health of students in particular because we are so vulnerable to this chemical.
As you write on your website, exposure to this chemical has been found to cause increased aggressive rates of breast cancer, leukemia, lymphoma, stomach cancer, miscarriages, and so much more. How do people in the community respond when they learn about this chemical?
Many of us are very angry. I know that initially when we went to these protests as a group, you would see members of the community surrounded with their kids, surrounded with their parents, all together just protesting to get the facility shut down in our neighborhood. And so we do have this anger, but we also have this concern for our fellow neighbors. And so that's really been a huge part of all this activism, just seeing those around us and seeing them suffer has really been an inspiration to kind of fighting for that legislation.
And why did you decide to start an organization in Guatemala?
So ethylene oxide is actually a chemical that's used across the world. And so it really is a global issue. While we are very much so centered in the United States because we really want to create nationwide legislation, it doesn't negate the fact that it is a global issue. And so that's why we started a chapter in Guatemala this year, because we do want to reach that international level. Awareness of this chemical is so important, especially for students. And to be able to have a chapter in a different country really just creates a way for us to reach more students and spread more awareness.
Well, that is Alexandra Collins. Alexandra and her sister founded Students Against Ethylene Oxide to educate students and others about the cancer risks associated with this chemical. And Alexandra is one of the winners of this year's Brower Youth Awards. And you can find more information about this chemical and her work at yourcallradio.org. We are also joined today by Danielle Boye, an Ojibwe Indigenous teen entrepreneur who helps increase STEAM, science, technology, engineering, art, and math. And Danielle, I have to say, I'm so used to hearing STEM, and I loved hearing STEAM to learn about art being included in that. I haven't heard much about STEAM. Is this pretty common?
This is fairly common, especially in the maker community where people are like designing robots, who are engineers, stuff like that. I think art is a really important aspect of STEAM because I want to give kids the tools to be able to become innovators in their own world, to be able to solve the problems that they see. And I think skills in design and programming and math and science, everything like that, kids need to have all-encompassing skills. And I think STEAM is a pivotal part of that.
I love that art is added to this. So I understand that you taught your first animal science class when you were only 10 years old. How did that happen?
So I was homeschooled for most of my life, and there weren't a lot of opportunities to like clubs, classes, things to be engaged in. And I've always loved working with students. I used to volunteer at my church when I was little and work with the kids, even when I was like their size. And one time I saw animal puppets at the store, and I said to my mom, I was like, hey, what if I taught an animal science class? And she's like, I don't know, dude, you're 10. And we ended up writing a curriculum together and teaching a semester long class. And that really opened my eyes to how I can use education as a way to solve the problems that I see around me. And it's a beautiful, empowering thing.
So this is really interesting. I watched an interview you did about robots, and you said that robots are actually really expensive and out of reach for a lot of communities. They can cost up to $500.
Yeah, so a lot of educational kits that are necessary to participate on robotics teams can cost a ton of money. Ones that are high quality can cost $400, $500, right?
Wow.
And that's just not accessible to many communities, especially my own Indigenous community. So, and I believe robots are a really important way to teach kids about everything from electrical engineering to 3D modeling to programming. And I think these are skills if we want to create future innovators of our earth, people who are inventing solutions for our future. Kids need these skills, right? But how are we going to get robots to them if they can't access those materials? How are we going to teach them these skills in an easy way? Because I think project-based learning is just so, so important. And so I decided to invent a robot named Every Kid Gets a Robot. And it's a robot that costs less than $20 and goes to kids for free. And it is biodegradable too, which is so, so cool. Huh. And that has been a really great way to be able to bring STEAM learning into kids' hands and to get them thinking about solutions for the future. One of my students, Vinia, she and I are designing a robot that picks up recyclables out of school hallways to be cleaned up. And she's only 12 years old. It's insane.
That is amazing. So tell us more about what the robot looks like and what it does.
So it looks like a little car, and it has hexagon wheels, like hexagon pattern on the wheels. And I chose the hexagon because I mentor 35 robotics teams, and one of them is a team I'm alumni from, which is Benzene Bots, Team 4384 from International Academy East. And every time my students and my team sees that robot, I want them to feel a sense of pride to know that whatever they make in the world, they can get out there and they can help people. And so that's why I have the hexagon patterns, and I have rubber bands on the wheels for traction, which is a really affordable way to be able to have the robots move around. It runs on a microcontroller called an ESP32 development board, which is Wi-Fi and Bluetooth compatible. So kids can use an app to control it, or I can pre-program it and they can have it run even if they don't have Wi-Fi, which is an issue in many Indigenous communities. Hmm. So the robot is really fun. The kids can assemble everything on one component. It's called a chassis. So it's basically the body of the robot. They can put the battery on there. They can put the microcontroller on there. They put the circuit and everything. They put the motors on, the wheels on, and it's a really simple assembly process. But while they're assembling the robot, it teaches them skills in electrical engineering, how to read a wiring diagram, how to program, how to interact with different software, how to even type, how to use a computer. It really engages students at every single level.
That's amazing. So you figured out how to make a robot for about $20, and you are sending these robots to kids across the country for free. And 50% of the organizations that receive these robots are Indigenous organizations?
So I've actually gone worldwide with the bots. We reached 12 countries, and just myself, I've sent out over 4,000 robots from this little workshop that I'm talking to you all from. And I also have a Make a Robot virtual platform. But the 50% Indigenous was for an event I did through Dasso Systems, which is a software company. And we did an event where we assembled in one day 150 robots, and 50% of the robots went to Indigenous organizations. Most of my robots go to Indigenous organizations and as well as Black communities. I feel like my resources should be affecting those who I want them to affect. So I make sure when I'm working with companies, when I'm working with different organizations, that they're reaching the kids that I believe are going to benefit the most from it.
Wow. Before we go to break, Danielle, can you tell us a story that stands out for you? I'm sure there are so many. Maybe about a child who did not have Wi-Fi and who was able to take part in learning about all of this thanks to one of the robots that you sent them.
So my relative from another nation, Dr. Joshua Allison Burbank from Navajo Nation, we've been working together on a book fundraiser to bring children's books, Navajo children's books to the kids on Navajo Nation during the pandemic, because, you know, Wi-Fi isn't as readily available and books are a really good way to keep the kids learning. And I've been sending robot kits and stuff over so that the kids can still access bots, even without Zoom, without Wi-Fi and everything like that. And I'm continuing to do that. And it's a really good feeling knowing that I can impact change and not even be there or know about it. It's happening all of the time. And it's a beautiful thing to be able to couple these Navajo books with the robots. And I just think that's so cool.
Wow. Incredible. Danielle Boyer is an Ojibwe Indigenous teen entrepreneur, author, educator, an inventor who helps increase STEAM educational accessibility, science, technology, engineering, art, and math. Diego Arriola Fernandez is an environmental and human rights activist. He created Green Speaking after learning about the devastating consequences of plastic pollution and excessive consumerism. He is based in Mexico. Alexander Collins started an organization with her sister called Students Against Ethylene Oxide to educate students and the public about the cancer risks associated with that chemical. Her activism began after learning that for 30 years, Sterigenics, an industrial sterilization company in Willowbrook, Illinois, had been emitting high levels of ethylene oxide near homes and schools in the area. Alexandra, Danielle, and Diego are three of this year's Brower Youth Award winners, and the ceremony will be online this year. It is free, so wherever you are, you can watch it as long as you have access to a computer. It'll take place October 15th from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. Pacific time, and you can find more information about registering at yourcallradio.org. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are speaking with three of this year's Brower Youth Award winners. Every year, the award honors young leaders for their accomplishments in the environmental movement. And today, we are speaking with Diego Arriola Fernandez. He created Green Speaking after he learned about the devastating consequences of plastic pollution and excessive consumerism in Mexico. Danielle Boye is an Ojibwe indigenous teen entrepreneur, author, and inventor who helps increase STEAM education, especially among low-income and indigenous students. Alexandra Collins and her sister started Students Against Ethylene Oxide in Illinois to educate the public about the cancer risks associated with that chemical. And if you have any questions or comments for our guest today, you have any questions about the incredible work that they're doing, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. You know, I have to ask all of you, it's a really intense time right now with the election, with COVID, the fires in California, everything we're learning about the climate crisis. And I have to tell you that, my colleagues at KALW, we're on chat right now talking, and everyone's saying, well, maybe there is hope for the planet after all, just hearing about the amazing work that you're doing. And Diego, I wonder, I mean, you're only 18 and you're so educated on what's going on in the world around climate change. What are your thoughts about, you know, what's in store for your future and the role that you want to play to create major change? Diego, are you with us?
I think he dipped out of the call by accident. I know Wi-Fi can be a little bit rough on Zoom calls sometimes.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll reconnect with him. Thanks, Danielle. Well, why don't you take that question, Danielle?
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, I mean, right now there's so much going on with the climate crisis, with the election, with COVID, and you're all so young doing amazing things. And it's just so important to remember that really great work is happening right now. And I just wonder, as a young person who's so aware of what's going on, what are your thoughts about your role at such a young age?
For the longest time, I didn't feel like I could make any change. I didn't feel like I could change the world at all. I didn't feel like I could impact students. And I felt like my different identities and everything didn't make any change. And it was a hard feeling for the longest time, especially I've lived through a lot of, you know, harassment, even being a woman in STEM. And you just hear a lot of people saying you can't do something, that you're not amounting to anything, that you'll never make the change that you want to. And it was finally when I had one of my students tell me that I was the first indigenous role model that they had seen in robotics, and that I made them want to pursue robotics and want to pursue environmental engineering and using robots to help our earth, that I realized that I could actually do something, and that my words were making a difference, and that my programs were making a difference. And it means just so much to me, because I know that it's not about me, it's about my students, and it's about what they're going to do in the world. And it's just such an empowering thing to know that just, it's like a domino effect, a ripple effect, you know? It's like, I can do this one small thing and I can create change where I want to see it.
It also must mean a lot to you, you know, given that we are having a really intense conversation, a much needed conversation about the true history of this country. Mm-hmm. And there are so many more stories about indigenous issues and so many more Indigenous people. We're hearing from more Indigenous people in the media across the board.
I am so happy about that. Even seeing different Indigenous people in Vogue magazine a few months ago. Right. That is beautiful. That is the change I want to see. Seeing my relatives in mainstream media, I think is so beautiful because all of our stories are so different and so unique and so special to us and our cultures. And I just love to see it so much.
Hmm. What about you, Alexandra? You're just 16 and you started this organization when you were 14, you know, trying to raise awareness about chemicals and I should say cancer causing chemicals. What are your thoughts about, you know, just your role in the world as a 16-year-old? I mean, there's so much work to be done. You're so young. How do you think about these issues?
So I kind of approach it as the fact that because I am younger, I'm able to more easily relate to students. And particularly this has been really impactful on SATO. In the past few months, we actually started our first specialized project, that we called the ETO Free Project. It actually was started by a group of seven other girls and I who, all didn't know how to code before we started this project, but we learned how to code together as a group, and we actually review ethylene oxide-free skincare products because ethylene oxide is used to sterilize a lot of commercial products. So we really do try to fight for label transparency and product production transparency, especially for teens, particularly for skincare, because teens use a lot of skincare because we get a lot of acne. And so having a role as a teenager has really enabled me to be more relatable to SATO students and really create that change.
Hmm. Can people find more information about that? Is that on your website about the care products?
So we actually coded our own website, which is really exciting. It's called ETO Free. So the website link is actually www.etofree.org. And we're actually in the midst of coding our own app, which is super exciting, considering that none of us have even taken a coding class. And so just being there to get for each other, especially as a group of girls, has made a huge impact. We are STEMinists, so we do really try to fight to create a safe space, particularly for females in STEM, because we know that oftentimes you go to things like hackathons as a teen and you're the only girl there. And having that feeling that you don't belong is not something anyone should ever have to feel. And so this project really tries to hit home both by supporting girls and their coding endeavors, and then also by raising awareness about ethylene oxide and how harmful it can be in certain products.
Did you say STEMinists?
Yes, we like to call ourselves STEMinists. We really like to advocate for females in STEM because, like I said before, I truly believe that females should not be limited in whatever they feel like they want to do in the future, particularly with something like coding. Coding is so transferable to all fields, and it's so important in activism because it really is a tool that you can use to spread awareness. And so that's why it's particularly important that females do not feel limited simply because of their background.
Hmm. Danielle, I'm guessing you can relate to what Alexandra is talking about.
Oh, for sure. I'm an engineering student right now. I'm double majoring in mechanical engineering and electrical engineering. And I definitely feel the imposter syndrome and kind of people not wanting you to be there a lot. And it's been like that for a really long time because I've loved robotics and designing things ever since I was a young kid. And my dad's an electrical engineer, so I've been in these circles for a while. And it can be so terrifying because I'll even go to conferences where I'm headlining at them, and I'll have people talk down to me and tell me I don't know what I'm doing or that I should stop the work I'm doing because girls aren't meant to be in STEAM, especially engineering. And it can be really demoralizing. And it's been really hard to kind of overcome that you know, all of those words and from others and the mean comments I get people who go out of their way to message me on Facebook to tell me that they don't like the work I'm doing, mm-hmm. or they don't like how I'm prioritizing by POC people in the work that I do. Wow. And I know that if it's hard for me, it has to be even harder for my students, because they're very loud voices in the world of STEAM, especially. And a lot of my students have gone on to start their own organizations, to teach their own classes, run their own programs. And I try to teach them that confidence too, that you're meant to be here. This is your superpower. My superpower is robots. Someone else's superpower may be coding. There's many different STEAM superpowers. And I think that once you recognize that you're meant to be doing the work that you're doing, and once you have a support system of people who care about you and want to see you thrive, I think you can do anything.
Hmm. How do you respond to some of those comments, or do you?
So often I take it with a grain of salt, and I realize that sometimes I can pull some constructive criticism out of it, even if they maybe it was kind of had malicious intent. I can say, okay, you said you hate women in STEM, but you also hate my screw size. Maybe I should just check my screw size to make sure that if it's the best it can be. It just reminds me to keep being the best me that I can be and to keep pushing onward. I've even had companies who sell the expensive robots, or who partner with the companies who sell the expensive robots, tell me to stop making my robots. Mm-hmm. And to me, I'm like, I'm just going to keep going. Mm-hmm. It's like, you're telling me that what I'm doing is working, you know? And what company tells an 18-year-old at the time to stop, you know, making their robots? It's like, you're supposed to be fostering students and supporting them. But it just reminds me, it's like, hey, I'm here to support my students. And other women in STEAM have really helped me become a better version of myself and realize that I can do the things that I want to do. Someone from Dassault Systems named Rachel York, she discovered me at a FIRST robotics competition. FIRST stands for Inspiration and Recognition of Science and Technology. And she saw me at a competition when almost all of our teammates didn't show up. It was at Worlds and like no one showed up. And I was really sad. And because of that, I was able to give my first keynote. So I believe in women supporting other women in STEAM and uplifting each other to create an even better world.
Wow. And I just want to repeat for listeners who maybe missed the first half of the show, Danielle was telling us that robots can cost up to about $500, which is just out of reach for so many people. So she's figured out how to invent a $20 robot that's called Every Kid Gets a Robot, and it's biodegradable, which is incredible. And she has sent out 4,000 robots to young people in 12 countries. And she also reaches communities that maybe don't have Wi-Fi, especially indigenous communities and Black communities. So she's doing absolutely amazing work. Danielle Boyer is an Ojibwe indigenous teen entrepreneur, author, educator, inventor who helps increase STEAM educational accessibility. She is one of this year's Brower Youth Award winners. We're also joined by Alexandra Collins. In 2018, she and her sister founded Students Against Ethylene Oxide to educate the public in Illinois about the cancer risks associated with ETO. They learned that Sterigenics, an industrial sterilization company in Willowbrook, Illinois, was emitting high levels of the chemical near homes and schools in the area. It is known as a carcinogen. Alexandra is also a winner of this year's Brower Youth Awards. Unfortunately, we disconnected with Diego Ariola Fernandez, but we're hoping to connect with him before we end the show. Diego created Green Speaking after he learned about the devastating consequences of plastic pollution and excessive consumerism in Mexico. There are three other winners of the Brower Youth Awards. Hannah Edenshaw is suing Canada for its role in the climate crisis. Chander Payne is helping marginalized youth grow food in Bethesda, Maryland. And Isabella Walmo is creating healing spaces for incarcerated youth in Andover. And you can watch this year's Brower Youth Awards ceremony. It's really an amazing evening. It'll take place October 15th from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. You can register at yourcallradio.org. We were talking about just STEAM and, you know, some of the barriers that you both face. And I just wonder, Alexandra, when you talk to fellow students, what really inspires young people the most when it comes to STEAM? What are they interested in? What really stands out for you?
For me in particular, I think young people are excited about coding. I actually was fortunate to be a part of the Code with Klossy camp this summer, which is run by the supermodel and entrepreneur Carly Kloss, and then also the Girls Who Code camp. And both of these camps were amazing to start off. They really taught us the fundamentals of coding and syntax for both website development and also app development. And so what I really saw these young girls getting excited about was being able to create stuff that they care about, being able to create a website that raises awareness about issues that they see in their community. And so what was really powerful is to have this group of all girls coding together and talking about stuff like Disney shows and in between learning about different syntax for coding. And so just having that free flow of conversation was amazing. And I was so fortunate to be a part of that camp because I'd been put in an environment previously in which I would go and try to learn about coding, but I wouldn't feel like I was welcomed. Mm-hmm. I would be one of few girls and I felt like it wasn't my place to be there. And so those two coding camps were just wonderful. And that's what really inspired me to kind of create that same sort of environment in the SATO organization.
And Alexandra, is this happening to you in high school or is this a separate class where you don't feel welcome?
So I've actually never taken a coding class, but I have been to hackathons. Mm-hmm. And these are basically big giant events. Normally they're a couple of days or sometimes they're 24 hours and you basically are given a time limit to create a project. And basically at the end of the hackathon, you turn it in and it's a competition and people win. And a lot of the times at these hackathons, they are mainly male dominated. And I know Danielle mentioned this before, but that imposter syndrome really does hit hard in those sorts of environments, just because of the fact that I myself have felt like I didn't belong there as a beginner coder. It wasn't my place to be creating projects and coding alongside these people who I envisioned as super coders, and they just looked like they knew everything, and so it was incredibly intimidating. And so those are the sorts of environments that I myself have been in. And so comparing the two has really shown me the power of having a safe environment for teens to code in.
How did you deal with that?
I'm going to be honest. I was not exactly the best at dealing with that. Sometimes I did kind of leave those sorts of situations and environments down. I'm actually a part of my school's robotics team, and I'm fortunate that our team is 50% girls. But going to those competitions, I saw teams that were all boys. We were actually at some of those competitions, the only team that had girls on it. And so really, I guess comparing those two, like I said before, has been so influential, but sometimes I've kind of come away from those sorts of environments and looked down upon myself and not been motivated to continue learning. But I really was inspired by those two camps and opportunities. Those are really great opportunities for me to gain confidence and believe in myself and realize that, no, there's nothing wrong with me not knowing that much about coding and being a girl in these environments. It's really just a matter of fact of building up my confidence and believing that I do belong there.
Hmm. Danielle, I'm sure you hear so many similar stories from your students.
Oh, yeah. And even in my own life, when I was a student on a robotics team, I was the only female upperclassman. And I had just joined in senior year because I was homeschooled for most of my life. I joined a robotics team at my high school. The kids were horrible. I was treated so badly for just wanting to learn about robotics and wanting to learn about STEAM. And I felt so out of place. And so I had to leave. And so I left to another robotics team. And the environment was honestly similar. And I was like, is this just engineering? Or it's like, it was so sad. And I was like, so many people must experience this. And so now I especially foster my students in my all-girls robotics teams that I mentor. I think that is so important. The girls thrive. They do so well. They are totally in their element. One of the team's head coach is one of the students' mothers, and she's an engineer too. And it's just so beautiful to see all the kids just so excited about making robots and drawing schematics and designing new things. And all of their favorite colors are, for my all-girls robotics team that's in middle school, their favorite colors are blue and green. And their theme focuses a lot around environmental awareness and stuff. And so they use that as an opportunity to educate even younger students about our Earth. And I think that's so cool.
Wow. You know, hearing the two of you, Danielle and Alexandra, so many of your experiences overlap. And we do shows about the Broward Youth Awards every year. This is the first year that we're not in person, so I'm sad that I'm not meeting you in person. And I just wonder, part of the amazing experience among the winners is meeting students and young people from all parts of the country and sometimes other parts of, you know, other countries. So Danielle, what has that been like? Have you all met over Zoom?
Yeah, we've done some really cool sessions, like team building sessions, learning about things like public speaking or storytelling, social media. Earth Island Institute has done a really great job in making sure that we've gotten to know each other and learned about each other's stories and have grown together as leaders. And I love that. I think that's so cool. And I think we're kind of used to it, especially since we're young and most of us, I think, communicate on like virtually all the time, even before the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I know most of my friends are from all over the world. Like two of my board members on my nonprofit are from Washington. So I see them only like once a year, right? So it's kind of weird. It is, especially like teaching the students virtually. I have to say that's the weird part because I feel like I can't connect with them in the same way that I would normally. But I really do miss out, I feel, on meeting people in person. And what I mean by that is in my day-to-day life, I don't say non-pandemic, I don't meet a lot of people with similar experiences or goals that I have. And I feel like a virtual opportunity is a great way to be able to meet people with similar goals who are my similar age. I have a lot of friends in Canada who are doing STEAM activism that I would never have met otherwise. And so I think that's a really cool thing. But sometimes I just want to give people a hug and say, oh my gosh, it's so cool to finally meet you, you know?
Right, right. There's nothing like in-person interaction, especially because you all have really grown up in the age of social media. Alexandra, what has the experience been like for you meeting other winners over Zoom?
So I've had a similar experience. It's been really cool to finally meet all of the other winners and hear about each of the other awardees' projects and experiences and learn from them. Seeing Danielle's work has been truly inspirational for me, especially because I am younger than most of the other winners. I really do look up to them as role models. And speaking on the whole virtual, I guess, platform and communication, it's been a new way to navigate I guess activism in general, and it has had its challenges, particularly for SATO, us being an organization of a lot of coders. We have had to code online and kind of share, and we call it push and pull, which is basically sharing code, and it's been very difficult to kind of connect the two and just the communication in general. But because we are doing everything virtually, it's a great opportunity for us to expand our organization and include more members from different areas of the country that we might have not thought about including before. Reaching to different states and having everyone finally interact with each other from each of our chapters has been beautiful to see, that final interaction. And so, yes, it has had its challenges, but in general, because of the whole COVID-19 pandemic, we have had to overcome them, and we've grown from them as an organization.
Alexandra, we have about a minute left. What is next for you and all of the work you're doing around ETO?
So we are trying to fight for national legislation to ban ethylene oxide near schools. Mm-hmm. And that is truly my end goal. I am waiting for that day to finally hear that and see that in the news headline. And so we're trying to slowly work towards that goal by spreading more awareness, by starting new chapters every single school year, and just in general, really trying to create an environment where it's safe for students to voice their opinions and for their opinions to actually be heard so that they do have a safe environment to learn in.
Incredible. Alexandra Collins and her sister founded Students Against Ethylene Oxide to educate people about the cancer risks associated with ETO. Alexandra, thank you so much for joining us, and I look forward to learning more about you at the ceremony next October 15th.
Thank you. It was great being here, and thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. Danielle, we have about a minute left. What's next for you and the work you're doing?
I'm releasing another robot in November, which I'm really excited about. It's going to have an open platform where people can just download all the robot materials and make the bots themselves. I'm releasing it on my birthday, and the robot's name is going to be 20 because I'm turning 20. So I'm really, really excited about that. And I also have a project coming up for Native American Heritage Month and some really cool things coming up with some pretty cool companies, some cool video stuff coming out that I am so excited about.
Where can people learn more about your robot? If we have a parent listening, for example, who'd like to get one for their child, is that possible?
Yes, it is. There's forums and more information online at www.steamconnection.org.
Fantastic. Well, it's really been amazing learning more about your work, and we'd love to have you back. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Danielle Boyer is an Ojibwe Indigenous teen entrepreneur, author, educator, and inventor who helps increase STEAM educational accessibility. And as she said, you can find information about the robots that she is sending out to communities across the country, actually really across the world, at yourcallradio.org. And I hope you can watch this year's ceremony October 15th from 5:30 to 6:30 Pacific. It is free. Find information yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.